Blog Talk Radio.
The time before. Today on Blog Talk Radio, we're going to be talking about, did you plan your lifetime here on this planet Earth? Would knowing your life purpose help you live this life more fully? Welcome to Blog Talk Radio this Sunday, January 17th, 2009. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for this edition of Breaking the Sound Barriers of Disease. That wonderful music was Cirrus by Tommy Priakas, our resident composer and just all-around wonderful human being. He composed that particularly for our show, and I love it. We're coming to you from the studios of Sound Health and the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for all your emails and comments. We're going to be answering some of those emails and requests and then go on with our very special guest, Rob Schwartz, and he's the author of Your Soul's Plan. In the book, Schwartz outlines his belief that we do pre-birth planning for what we're going to be learning as we inhabit this meat and bones body. We're going to be talking about your life, your planning, how to do that, other people's stories, your life purpose. Is everything in divine order? Is everything preordained? Those are some of the questions I want to ask. We'll be with Rob in just a few minutes. We just need to take care of some announcements. One, many of you have been complaining that you tune in to hear about vocal profiling and what we're doing at our research center, Sound Health. You send in your requests, and we're not able to get to them, and you're complaining, and I understand that. I will endeavor to take care of that and bring out more vocal profiling, do more online vocal analysis on upcoming shows. As a matter of fact, we've got a special one planned for Valentine's Day. We're going to be doing relationship compatibility. So bring your significant other to the show and we'll see if you get along or don't. Number two, we were asked by a listener to look at Rush Limbaugh's voice and see if we could see why he collapsed and why there's no answer from the hospital about why that happened. But we did a vocal analysis, and we found nanobacteria. Now, some people think these are live little critters, and some people think it's just crystallization of calcium. He has nanobacteria as a significant issue, and one of the things about nanobacteria is the symptoms come and go. So we've written a paper about that, and it's going to be available. It is available. The other request we had was about Tiger Woods. Why did he lose the PGA this year? And we did an analysis and found out that he has a lot of back stress. We've posted both of these on Facebook under Sherry Edwards, and remember that Sherry with an A. Or you can get them from writing to me, Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, on air, sherryonair@gmail.com. And for those of you who ask about Simon Crowell and Ellen DeGeneres, are they going to get along? Well, no. There's going to be an ego fight. Well, it's over now because Simon quit, but we know what's going on there, too, because we did an analysis of Simon and Paula's voice. So we will be posting that in just a bit. A couple of you asked about our PTSD project, that's post-traumatic stress disorder. We are presently training people who want to work with the returning soldiers. You know, the statistic, 1 in 5 returning soldiers is attempting suicide. That's just incredibly unacceptable. But maybe our guest today can help us with that. But if you're interested in helping these wounded warriors to get on with their life path, please get in touch with me. Again, Sherry on air. Many of the classes are free, Not all. The professional level classes that help you set up your professional practice using bioacoustics are not free, nor should they be, because it's very valuable information. It took us a lot of years to put that together. Okay, number four, we are a nonprofit 501c3. We do accept donations, and that's mostly put towards scholarships. So if you want to take a class but money is an issue, just get in touch with us and we'll see if we can work that out. And I think the last announcement, one question came up before the show because we always send out an announcement of what's going to happen. And Amy emailed us. And by the way, if you're on Blog Talk Radio with us, you can go to the chat room and send us questions. And Amy sent us this question to my regular email. She asked if we could take our guest voice and look at his past lives. Was there a way to do this? And there is. There's one based on the date of birth and one based on the day today. And we'll see what we can do with that and see if our guest is willing to help. Okay, we're also going to be taking questions of this very fascinating subject. We're going to be taking calls at 347-850-1407. 347-850-1407. Or you can Skype us. Just the address there is Sherry on Air again. Remember that if you want to ask a question, you'll call into the Blog Talk Radio, and it'll say punch number one if you want to ask a question. Or if you just want to hang on there as a listener, you don't have to do that. Okay, that's all of the business we had to take care of. Rob Schwartz, author of Your Soul's Plan, is with us today, and we entitled this show The Time Before. Fascinating, fascinating subject, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be here.
We did sneak a peek at your voice. How do you feel about telling it all on the show? You tell a lot of it in your book.
There are some personal things in the book, but I'm completely comfortable with you assessing my voice.
Okay. Now, I must admit, I did not read the entire book. I didn't have it, and we couldn't get it in time. But I did read the excerpt online, and it's fascinating. You talk about what spurred you on to write this book for your own kind of awakening, but what do you want other people to get out of it?
The most important thing that I would like other people to get out of my research into pre-birth planning is the very fundamental notion that, in my view, there is no such thing as purposeless or meaningless suffering. I believe that everything that happens to us, including and most particularly the challenging things that happen to us, all of this is rich with deeper meaning. Now, often the deeper meaning is hidden or veiled from us, and that's the focus of my research, is to sort of lift that veil and look at the deeper meaning of the challenging things that happen to us. But I think we live in a time in which the victim mentality is quite prominent, and many people, perhaps even the average person, when something quote-unquote bad happens to them, they tend to feel victimized. They may believe that God is punishing them or the universe is punishing them, or they have quote-unquote bad karma and so they're being punished for that, or they just see no deeper meaning or deeper purpose to what's happening. And I think that there is a deeper meaning, which we ourselves choose before we're born. And that's what I'm attempting to uncover in my work. Let me also just say quickly, Sherry, there's a website at yoursoulsplan.com, and people can download part of the book for free there. And I would encourage people to do that.
I read that first 38 pages. That was enough to want me to be upset that they didn't get me the book beforehand, because now I was stressed. You talk in the book about pre-birth planning. Do you think everything is planned, and can we change the plan?
I don't think that everything literally is planned, but I think certainly the major outline for our lives is planned, and I think in many cases a lot of the details are planned. Certainly we choose our parents, we choose the physical location where we will be born, we choose the chronological time period in which we will be born, we plan the kind of body that we will have and if we will have any physical defects. And then in some of the research I've done, I've seen much, much more detailed planning. For example, one of the stories in the book is the story of a gentleman, Bob Feinstein, who was completely blind from an accident that occurred, a seeming accident that occurred at birth. And when we went into his planning session with his guides, we saw him choosing homes that he was going to live in, the schools that he was going to go to, friends that he was going to make, down and down to the most minute detail. Now, you asked if the plan can be changed. It's my understanding that there isn't just a plan A, so to speak, for a life. There's also a plan B, C, D, E, F, and on and on and on. There are so many what you might call backup plans or contingency plans that it really is beyond the comprehension of the human brain. And what I see in my research is that we activate different timelines or different pre-birth options depending upon our free will decisions. So, for example, we live in a time, I believe, of widespread spiritual awakening, which to a large extent is a conscious choice. If somebody listening today has chosen or chooses in the future to awaken, and by that I mean to realize that you are more than your body, you are more than a personality, you are an eternal soul, a divine being. If you choose to have that kind of awakening, you lift yourself out of what you might call a lower vibration pathway or timeline, and you open up an infinite number of possibilities of a higher vibration, and then you start to move down one of those timelines. And this is true for all the decisions we make in our lives. When we come to a key decision point and then we choose, it activates certain timelines and closes down others. One of my collaborators in my research is a medium in Arizona, Stacy Wells, who has the ability to go into someone's pre-birth planning session. And when she does this work, she reports that she sees what looks like an incredibly vast flowchart. Now, what is a flowchart? It's a series of decision points. And you get to a point, and if you choose A, then X happens. If you choose B, then Y happens. She sees in the pre-birth planning sessions these vast, intricate flowcharts. And what this is a representation of our soul's planning for the upcoming lifetime, and the soul takes into account our free will decisions.
Well, do we have to live it out physically? I mean, why couldn't we just read a book or watch a movie, you know, and learn our lessons that way?
Well, there are a number of reasons for that. The primary one being what I've seen in my research is that we learn through the experience of emotion. So by coming here to what is essentially an illusion, but by believing that the illusion is real, the seeming reality of what we're going through generates very intense emotions, and how we respond to those emotions determines our evolution. So if you were to be in the non-physical realm and just read a book about what life on Earth is like in a body, you would know that you weren't actually having that experience, and because you weren't having it, it wouldn't generate nearly the intensity of emotion that an incarnation would generate. So this is why I think we come here. Another major reason for actually doing it in body is that the soul wants to have a physical experience, the physical experience of giving love in a body, receiving love while on the physical plane. The soul certainly can give and receive love, but there's an intensity that comes from doing that while in a body, while in the physical plane, and this is the experience the soul is after.
Well, if we plan all of this out, like the case of Penelope you were talking about in your book, why would she plan out hearing her mother shot so that she could just spend another lifetime getting over it? I mean, if everything is planned, why was that so significant? And now she's doing two lifetimes to get over.
Well, keep in mind that not everything is planned. And actually, the specific example you've just cited is an instance of something that was not planned. And let's back up here and explain to the listeners what it is we're referring to. The book, Your Soul's Plan, is organized by type of life challenge. So each chapter focuses on the pre-birth planning of a particular kind of challenge. And the chapters are broken down by physical illness, the chapter you're referring to on deafness and blindness. There are stories and chapters about the pre-birth planning of drug addiction, alcoholism, severe accidents, the death of a loved one, basically common sorts of challenges. Now, in the chapter on the pre-birth planning of deafness and blindness, I share the story of a young African-American woman, Penelope, who at the time I interviewed her a few years ago was in her mid-20s. Penelope was born completely deaf. In the session with the medium, we go into her pre-birth planning session. We ask Spirit the question, did Penelope plan to be born completely deaf, and if so, why? One of the things we found out in this research is that in the lifetime immediately prior to this one, Penelope had the same mother she has in this lifetime. And when she was a young child in that past life, she heard her mother shot to death by the mother's boyfriend. This is the story that you're referring to. I asked in the session with the medium, was the murder of Penelope's mother in that past life planned before that lifetime? And the answer was no. It was a free will, fear-based decision on the part of the mother's boyfriend. So that was not something that Penelope and her mother and the boyfriend set up prior to life to the lifetime. The mother's boyfriend decided on his own, based upon his own fearful responses to his life, that he was going to take the life of Penelope's mother. Now, what happened there is that Penelope, as the young child, heard the gunshots that led to her mother's death. She didn't actually see the murder, but she was within hearing range, and she heard the gunshots that led to her mother's death. As you can imagine, she was quite traumatized by that sound, and here we see the importance of sound, the focus of your research. The trauma from that sound was left unhealed in that lifetime, and in fact, Penelope was so traumatized that she actually later committed suicide in that lifetime. So she returned to spirit with what you might call an energy of unresolved trauma, which now needs to be healed. In the pre-birth planning session, her spirit guide says to her, "My dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no similar trauma will happen to you again, and so that you can complete your healing from the last lifetime?" And Penelope responds, "Yes, that is what I want and what I wish to do." And then what ensues is a fascinating discussion in which she and her guide talk in detail about the planning of deafness for the current lifetime.
I have a question from the chat, and it's kind of long, but it's about this. If you choose every second of your life, then why would you choose it just to change it? So I'm not sure if we are constantly thinking like that, then how can anyone ever really live and live a normal life and not be distracted by the constant nuance? It sounds creepy.
I want to make sure I understand the question. So the question is, can we rephrase that?
Well, I can't rephrase. I'll just read it to you again.
Okay.
If you choose every second of your life, which you just said you don't always,
right,
then why would you choose it just to change it? So you've answered that part. We got somebody coming in. It's rolling up on me. So I'm not sure if we are constantly thinking like that, then how can anyone ever really live and live normal and not be distracted by the constant nuance? Is everything is pre-planned or maybe pre-planned, then what and when and how? This sounds really complicated. It sounds creepy.
I would strongly disagree with that. I think far from being creepy or complicated, this kind of an orientation to life is very healing and inspiring and helpful. And let me explain why I believe that. I said earlier that the seeming reality we experience here on the physical plane is an illusion. And it is. It's an illusion created by the five senses and the limitations of the five senses so that most people can't perceive the vast reality that's beyond the physical realm. It's as though we are all actors on a stage, but most of us have forgotten that we're actors. So we're completely identified with the role that we're playing on the stage, and this is a role that we ourselves scripted before birth. So imagine, Sherry, if you are an actress at the local community theater in the town in which you live, and while you're up on the stage in the middle of performing a part in a play, somehow you suddenly develop amnesia, you forget that you're Sherry, and you actually believe that you are the character you're portraying on the stage in that moment. Now, let's also say, for this hypothetical example, that another actor is called upon by the part that he or she is playing to hurt you. So another actor comes up and strikes you in the face. Now, you, believing that this is your reality and that you are that character on the stage, you believe that you have just been attacked by someone. So, of course, you're traumatized by it. If you can wake up, so to speak, And remember that you are not the character you're playing on the stage, but rather you are Sherry playing the character on the stage. Then all of a sudden, it's a very different experience. You know that you haven't actually been attacked by someone. You know that it's just a part that another actor is playing out on the stage. It allows, that sort of perspective allows you to step back from what appears to have happened and see it from a much, much broader vantage point. It's almost like you've gone from being the character on the stage to being somebody in the audience watching yourself play the character on the stage. That has the effect, number one, of diffusing the emotions, so you no longer feel that you've been attacked. And number two, you can look at it from a bigger perspective. If you think of your life as, say, a painting, and it appears imperfect to you, as it does to the average person, all that means is that you are standing too close to the painting to see it clearly. You need to take a few steps back and get a bigger vantage point. The way you do that is to understand that you are the eternal, holy soul who planned the lifetime. That perspective helps you step back from the painting of your life and see it in a broader context so that you can see its perfection and look for the deeper meaning in the things that happen to you. One of the things I say in the introduction to Your Soul's Plan is that you don't actually have to believe in pre-birth planning to benefit from this perspective. All you have to do is when something quote-unquote bad happens to you, ask yourself one very simple question, which is this. If I planned this experience before I was born, why might I have done that? The asking of that question will help you to see the deeper meaning in it. And again, you don't have to believe in pre-birth planning to get to that deeper meaning. All you have to do is ask the question.
Well, here's somebody who just asked a question. I got 20 more over here. This is like a whole other life that you're forced to live. But you're saying there's pre-planning to it, that we want to live this life.
We do. And this, I understand, is tremendously difficult to grasp from the perspective of the human being. And so one of the things I talk about in my work is the perspective of the soul. The perspective of the soul in regard to a lifetime, and in particular in regard to suffering during the life, is different from the human perspective in three very important ways. The first one is that from the soul's vantage point, a lifetime is very, very brief. It's as brief as a clap of thunder. Now, for you and me and everybody listening today, while we're in body, and particularly if we're suffering, it feels like the lifetime can go on and on and on. But from the soul's vantage point, it's incredibly brief. It's here, and then it's over. Second key difference between the soul perspective and the perspective we have once in body is that when we are in the non-physical realm, we understand that nobody is permanently harmed by the things that happen here. Now, we lose that perspective once we're in body, but we understand it when we're planning the lifetime. And the third key difference is that when we're in the non-physical realm, we understand that whatever we learn from the incarnation will become part of the soul for all eternity. The wisdom, the love, the evolution, those things become part of the soul for literally all eternity. So when you consider that a lifetime is actually very, very brief, that no one is permanently harmed by anything that happens here, and that the wisdom we acquire becomes part of us forever, from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense that you would plan an incarnation and that you would plan challenging things to happen during that incarnation.
Here, this goes right along with it, and this is, came in from email. That's a challenging question. Isn't this just a way to help people accept the cards they've been dealt, a way to cope instead of resigning and having to live and take care of a handicapped child? This is a way to convince yourself that you have some control, and this is really a gift from the universe.
Well, let me clarify that it's not my desire to convince anyone of anything. My work is an offering, not an attempt at persuasion. I say to the people listening today, if this perspective about pre-birth planning resonates with you and is helpful to you in some way, then pick up the ball and run with it. Apply it in your own life. If it doesn't resonate with you, if it's not helpful to you, then you can and you should discard it. But I want to emphasize it's an offering, not an attempt at persuasion. Now,
do you have people go through mediums, or do you do past life regressions, or how do you get people to this place to look at their pre-planning?
Well, let me finish the question you just asked, because that the person who talked about the handicapped child, that's a good example of where this perspective comes in handy. I heard after my book came out from a woman, I believe it was in Florida, who is a teacher to handicapped children, and she said that for all of her career, prior to reading Your Soul's Plan, she had looked at her handicapped students with pity. She felt sorry for them because they had handicaps. And after reading the book, she came to believe that they planned those handicaps for themselves prior to birth for reasons of their own, having to do with spiritual evolution. And she said it completely changed the way she looked at her students. Instead of feeling sorry for them as she had for so many years, she was filled with admiration and respect for the raw courage that it took for them to plan those handicaps. And she felt that the shift in attitude made her a much better teacher to those handicapped kids. Now, again, whether or not you believe in pre-birth planning is not the point. The point here is that it helped her see them in a new light that allowed her to be a much better teacher. That's the kind of shift in perspective that I think can come from an awareness of pre-birth planning.
I can tell you an instance in my own life. I had an absolutely unreasonable hatred of Hitler. I wouldn't study about him in school. It just sent me into an absolute rage. And going back to pre-lives and looking at this, I was a young girl that was abused by one of Hitler's officers, and I recognized that officer in this lifetime and hated him here for no reason, but went to both our higher selves, and mine was, don't you remember that was your way of helping the world learn compassion? And that lessened it a little bit. We went back and tried to see where my hatred started, but also where the hatred started with this guy that I hated in this lifetime for no reason. And went to his higher self, and we had a conversation, and it was, don't you remember, Sherry, one of us had to be the victim, and one of us had to be the perpetrator, and you couldn't stand the thought of being the perpetrator, so I took on that role.
No.
That released all of this, without reason, hatred against this man and against Hitler and where could I love Hitler? And not until he was a baby could I see him. So it really helped release a lot. Was that pre-planned? I don't know, but it has a significant effect, influence on my life that I just can't stand other people being run over or hurt. I will go to the greatest of lengths to stop that.
You know, I'm glad you shared that story. It reminds me of another story that someone I was working with recently who experienced, this is a woman who experienced incest with both her father and her grandfather when she was a child. And she had an experience as an adult a number of years ago in which she was in meditation, and her deceased mother and a number of other relatives who had returned to spirit came to her. And she said that it was clearly not her imagination. They actually came to her and spoke with her in her mind during the meditation. And they said to her, don't you remember that you planned this experience of incest? Now, I understand this is a tremendously difficult concept to grasp, and the natural human reaction is to be appalled at the very thought of such an act. But for her, she said that it was deeply healing to be told this, and she said when she heard it from her mother and the other relatives, she remembered that it was true, and she said it was deeply, deeply healing to her because all of her life prior to that point, she had felt herself to be a victim and felt that the universe was a dangerous, unfriendly place, and she was powerless in it. And she said the moment that she remembered planning the experience of the incest, it gave all of her power back to her because she knew that she was in control of everything she experienced, and it totally pulled her out of that victim mentality. That was profoundly, profoundly healing for her. And for people who are ready to work with this kind of a concept, it can have that kind of a healing effect.
You know, the questions are coming in like crazy now. This is wonderful. This is just... a strange question, but it's intriguing. Is there someone who keeps track of all those plans?
Well, the plans are recorded in what many of your listeners will be familiar with as the Akashic Record. The Akashic Record is a non-physical record of every thought, action, word. Some people call it the mind of God. It records everything, not just what we do here on the physical plane, but also the pre-birth planning component of it as well. But in addition to that, your soul also has a complete grasp of the pre-birth planning. So your soul knows exactly where you are on your path and what sorts of timelines are coming up that could be activated and which ones have been chosen in the past and which ones have been passed by and were not chosen. Your soul knows exactly where you are, and it's always working to guide you to the path of joy and peace and greatest learning. And it does that through intuition and inspiration. And your guides are working in the same way as well. They are whispering in your ear, this is the path to choose for your greatest growth and learning. They're always leading you along a path that was planned prior to birth.
I have a very personal question here.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvia Franck, in her book, The Tree of Life and the Holy Grail, has named the work I do as part of the Templar Hidden Information. And she names me as one of the modern keepers of the Holy Grail. And people are familiar with that from the Da Vinci Code movies. But I can tell when I meet somebody who's done this work before, there's a feeling about them. And they're coming back together to take classes and learn how to do this. And they just kind of get it automatically. It's kind of in their soul. Is there a group soul plan as well as individual ones?
My understanding, well, let's first define what a soul group is. A soul group, as I understand it, is a group of individual souls who are at more or less the same evolutionary stage and who plan multiple incarnations with each other. So you and the members of your soul group will take turns across different lives being husband and wife, mother and daughter, father and son, best of friends, mortal enemies, murderer, and the one who is murdered. We play all of these different roles for each other to stimulate each other's growth and for our own growth as well. And there's no judgment from the soul level about any of the roles. They're simply roles, characters being played on a stage. Now, as I understand it, soul groups do make plans to do sort of what you might call bigger projects together. And there are plans among collections of soul groups as well. And let me give you an example here. You'll recall the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia a few years ago in which more than 100,000 people were killed.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked about that in our sessions with the mediums and channels, and what Spirit has shared with me is that the 100,000 or so who gave their lives in the tsunami, they had a collective pre-birth plan in which they looked at the state of the world before they were born, and they said basically, we would like the collective consciousness to be at a certain vibration by a certain point in linear time. And if it's not there by that time, or if it appears that it's not going to be there, then we agree to give our lives in a large-scale natural catastrophe because we know that the result of that catastrophe will be a worldwide outpouring of love and support and compassion, which will raise the vibration of the entire planet. And you might recall, Sherry, that's exactly what happened. In the wake of the tsunami, you had all of the different governments around the world temporarily put aside their differences in order to work together to funnel aid into Southeast Asia. That outpouring of love and compassion and support did exactly what those souls had planned. It raised the vibration of the entire planet. So this is a good example. You might be familiar with that old adage, where you stand depends upon where you sit. And this is a good example of that. You know, if you are a human being who sits in the third dimension, then your stand, so to speak, about the tsunami is that it was a terrible disaster, and that's a completely understandable way to look at it. But if you are, say, a spirit guide in a non-physical dimension, who sits in a non-physical dimension, then your stand about the tsunami is that it was planned by those souls before they were born, and it happened exactly the way it was supposed to, and it was a great blessing to the world. That's also a completely valid way to look at it. So here you have one event, the tsunami, two diametrically opposed viewpoints, And both of them are absolutely correct, depending upon which dimension the being is in that's looking at the tsunami.
Well, what about the people who took the money and the food that were donated and stuck it in their pocket? Are those the people who build up kind of this negative karma, if you want to say that? Are they the ones that have to spend more lives? Well, I have 1,000 questions coming in here on three directions.
There are only two possibilities there. The people that stole the money and the food, either they planned before birth to do it or they didn't. Now, my guess would be that many of them did not plan to do that before birth, and this was a fear-based response based upon the limited habitual thinking, namely the idea that lack and limitation actually exist, which we know that they don't, but it appears that way in the third dimension, and so that belief creates fear, and then the fear in turn creates behavior like the stealing of food and money. So my guess would be that many of those people were acting in fear and that they didn't plan to do that before birth. But having said that, it's entirely possible that some of those people stealing the food and money did have a pre-birth plan to do that. You could conjecture, as well as I can, as to why a soul might plan to do that. There could be any number of reasons. Some of it might have to do with some sort of karmic balancing. Some of it might have to do with forgiveness. Often, you know, souls plan to play out a quote-unquote negative role so that other souls have the opportunity to work with forgiveness here on the physical plane. But there could be many reasons for that.
Here's a really good question. Does the cycle ever end? Can you choose to stay dormant for a while?
As I understand it, we are not forced to incarnate on Earth. But believe it or not, when we get back into spirit, we generally want to, because from that vantage point, again, it looks very different from there, and what we do here appears to be a very exciting adventure, which in fact it is from that vantage point. But as I understand it, you can take a break from incarnating for a long, quote-unquote, time if you want to, and you're not actually forced to come back. But many souls want to come back because, again, as I understand it, it accelerates the evolutionary process. The intensity of the experience here produces an accelerated rate of growth and evolution that you can't really get if you're not in a body.
Well, if you're aware of it and you're aware of where it's going, I think that would accelerate the learning too. And that's a lot of what your book offers to people.
Yes, that's basically one of the main points of the book is for people to understand that these seemingly bad things that happen to all of us over the course of our lives, there is a purpose to this. There is a deeper meaning. And you can get at a lot of that meaning by looking at it from the soul level perspective and from the pre-birth planning perspective. Again, the question to ask is, if I planned this experience before I was born, why might I have done that? When you ask that question, it opens up an entirely new way of looking at life.
There's a question here, actually two questions. I'm going to try to stick together. You've answered part of it, but I think this body, and she must mean her body, now is wholly integrated with my guides, but I think I have more than one, like an oversoul. Would you talk about that a bit? Do our guides live through us on their own journey, or are they there just to support us? And in this lifetime, who do you suggest people go to find this out? Can we do it through your book? Do you suggest mediums? Do you suggest past life regression? Boy, that's a big question.
As I understand it, guides have a lot to do other than guide us. But the guides, their consciousness is not focal in the sense that ours is or that we believe it is. In other words, the average person in a body believes that they are their consciousness is limited to a particular time, space, location. So your guide, as I understand it, doesn't have that kind of a limitation. They could be doing something in the non-physical realm and also working with you at the same time. But what's been shared with me is that the guides are on their own evolutionary path, and they're learning and studying as well and taking classes and having evolutionary experiences of their own. Now, in terms of how do you contact your guides or how do you hear from them, find out who they are, the best way really is meditation. Quiet your mind and then just listen for what comes. A good technique is to pose a particular question before you go into meditation direct it to your guide, say it out loud, and then just quiet your mind and listen for the response that comes. Mental chatter will get in the way of hearing that response. And it's really important, I think, not to get frustrated or angry with yourself if your mind is chattering, because if you're a beginning meditator, it will. And the mind chatter will get worse if you get frustrated or angry with yourself for not being able to quiet your mind. Mind chatter is often a defense mechanism on the part of the mind in response to emotional pain. So if you put yourself in more emotional pain by getting frustrated or angry at a chattering mind, the result will be more chattering by the mind. So if the chattering comes up, just observe it. Pretend that these thoughts are on a raft, on a river. Just let them float by you. And eventually, as you do this over weeks and months, your mind will get more quiet. Then when it does, you can start to hear the guides answer your questions. Now, you might get a verbal answer, but it's very possible you will get an answer as an image that might come into your mind, possibly a very diffuse image like a color. That might be the extent of the answer. Or very often people will get an answer in terms of a feeling. For example, you might pose a question to a guide, should I do X? And then in your meditation, you will get a feeling of rightness or wrongness about doing X. People can talk themselves out of that feeling and say, oh, it's just my imagination. But it really isn't. That's your guide communicating with you through feeling. Feelings are the language of the soul. And this is how both your higher self and your guides will try to reach you. They will create a feeling state within you.
Well, we have another question here from One at a Time. And she said, this is very interesting, but what does it have to do with sound analysis? The theory flies in the face of personal responsibility in our life. Well, I mean, I'll answer the first one. What does it have to do with sound analysis? We've been running some studies about, can we look at past lives through somebody's vocal print? And can we look at the patterns and the lessons through a vocal print? And we found out that we could by doing hypnosis, taking people back to past lives and matching the two together. And we did this with Rob, and his birthday is a note of D. Let me look. You're June, right? You're a Gemini?
That's right.
Okay, and when we looked at his frequencies that we identified as his past life information and karma, if you will, it ended up being D-sharp, which is life energy at a cellular level, and A-sharp, which is active life purpose in a spiritual way. So that I would interpret his past lives coming into this one to be providing the energy for people to see their life purpose in a spiritual and active manner from a cellular perspective. And I look at his book, and that's exactly what he's doing, but I need to ask Rob, what do you think of that as looking at your past lives or your purpose in this life from the past?
Well, I think the explanation that you've provided, Sherry, makes a lot of sense, and that resonates as true for me. I can share a little bit more about my own past lives, what I know of them, and why I'm doing the work that I'm doing now. It's my understanding that I was in Nazi Germany as a German citizen who was opposed to what the Nazis were doing, but apparently I was too afraid to speak out against it. And so there was a karmic debt that accrued from that. And apparently I had a lifetime in Atlantis that was much the same. I was opposed to some of the or all of the atrocities that were taking place, but I was too fearful to speak out against them. And so, again, karma accrued because of that. And so one of the things I'm doing in the current lifetime is having the courage to speak my truth, which is about pre-birth planning, even though it's not yet a widely accepted truth. And this is balancing the karma from the two previous lives in which I was too fearful to speak my truth.
I understand that. And I think a lot of people are that way, and I think your book's going to help them move through that. I have another question from the audience. Just looked you up on Amazon. You're not on Kindle, grr.
That has been an ongoing thing with the publisher for a number of months, but I can tell you that there is a Kindle version in the pipeline, and I'm told that it will be out in late March.
Can people get this book from you, your site?
Yes. If you go to yoursoulsplan.com, you can order the book there. You can also order it on Amazon from any bookstore in the country. And something that I particularly encourage people to do is ask your local library to order Your Soul's Plan for you. This has two benefits. One is you can read the book for free. You won't actually have to pay anything for it because the library will order it. But the reason I really like people to do this is that part of my mission is to make this information about pre-birth planning available to as many people as possible, including the many people who actually can't afford to buy a book. So if you get your library to carry the book, it becomes available to many, many more people who really don't have the funds to purchase books, and then this healing information can help them in their lives to look at their challenges in a new way.
I just looked this up on Amazon. 5 stars. That's high as they can get. There's some great reviews here on Amazon. One from Daniel Brinkley. The more we know about the meaning of life, the better we understand the important choices we must make. Robert Schwartz has done an excellent job of presenting the possible explanations of what we are doing here and why we are here. I highly recommend this book, which was previously published under the title Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Lives? Challenges Before Birth. Daniel Brinkley, that's high praise. And it's on sale right now, too. It's on sale for $10.17, I think. I just slipped out of that, but I think that's what it said. That's incredible. I don't know which question to take next. Here's a little story from my own life. My mother was dying. She wanted to die. She was tired of living. And so I was reading her a book about this nun that went into the jungles and was acting as the doctor to this backwoods tribe. And this reporter said to her, aren't you afraid of getting sick out here? Aren't you afraid that you're going to die because you're the only doctor? Who would take care of you? And she said, I think death is God's reward for living a life.
Hmm.
And that just helped my mother so incredibly. Here's another question from the audience. Do you use hypnosis to help people remember? Can we reconstruct history this way?
I myself do not work with hypnosis, but there's a gentleman that many of your listeners have probably heard of, a doctor named Michael Newton, who wrote a couple of very good books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. Basically, what Newton has done in his work is that he hypnotizes people and regresses them to the pre-birth state. Some of which includes looking a little bit at pre-birth planning, but his inquiry is much broader than that. Basically what he's doing is taking people back to their lives in spirit and looking at everything that we do when we're in the non-physical realm. So my exploration of pre-birth planning is to take a slice of that non-physical existence and examine it in tremendous depth, trying to determine why we choose the lives that we choose. But hypnosis is a very powerful tool. And there is what he calls an LBL, or a life between life regression, where you can go back into your pre-birth state and find out pretty much anything that you would like to know, including why you planned the life that you planned.
Is a lot of this on your website?
Yes, there's. I'm having trouble remembering which page it's on now, but I believe if you go, there's a page called Accessing Your Pre-Birth Plan at www.yoursoulsplan.com, and I'm trying to give people as many resources to work with as possible, not just my own work. So I believe it's on that page that there's a meditation where you can go into your pre-birth planning. There's also a link to Michael Newton's website, which I think is spiritualregression.org, and there's a couple other techniques that you can work with that are presented on that page that will help you figure out what your pre-birth plan was.
Do you do workshops about this? Do you have private sessions with people?
Well, we're just coming out with that now. My colleagues and I, the mediums and channels who I work with in this research, have put together a workshop where we are going to be working with the people in attendance to help some of them, or perhaps all of them if we have time, figure out some of their pre-birth plan. And there's a speaking engagements page at yoursoulsplan.com. Anybody who would like to participate in one of those workshops, just keep an eye on the announced speaking engagements on that page, and we're going to try to bring that around the country.
I would like to be part of this project, and when you have somebody that would be willing to help us out here, to you take them through what you do, we'll put them through a vocal profile, and let's see if this matches. I think
that would be very, very
interesting. A tremendous way to look at that.
Yeah, it would be.
Question, and this one's from me, because it happened to me. You talk about your awakening when you love everyone unconditional. Many of us have gone through this. My issue is, how do you live in man's world and God's world at the same time? Because when you try to tell people about this, they look at you like you're crazy, especially the people in the elevator or who you say hello to on the street. It's like, you know, what nutcase is this going down the street? And it's just because you love everyone and they're not getting it and you're trying to give it.
You know, I think the best thing to do to live it is just be the example. Like Gandhi said, be the example of the change you want to see in the world. It's not necessary to tell anyone about it or initiate conversation about it. If you just go about your life loving people and being happy, everybody around you will notice this. And some of those people will pull you aside and they'll say, you seem to be so much happier or so much more peaceful than you used to be. What's going on? Because they want that same happiness and peace for themselves. That's the point where you can start to share, and it's appropriate to start to talk about your own spiritual awakening and whatever you've experienced. But the lead into that is just to be the example, like Gandhi said.
You can, and sometimes it's contagious, and other times they just, you know, and get out of my face. Other questions from the audience. So why should we try to get better if we have a disease, if that's what we planned all along in the first place?
Because part of the plan also includes trying to get better from the disease. What we're basically doing is coming here to have certain sorts of experiences. So sometimes the question is asked, are murders ever planned before birth? And the answer to that question is yes. And then the question comes up invariably, well, if a murder was planned before birth, then why do we have a legal system? Why should we punish anybody? Because all of this is known prior to birth. So if someone has agreed to murder someone else prior to incarnating, they know that they're incarnating in an historical time period in which there is a legal system and laws and prisons and punishment. And believe it or not, some souls who agree to commit murders are seeking that experience of going through the legal system, going to prison. All of this is known by the soul prior to incarnating. If you wanted to experience a disease and not have the experience of fighting the disease, then the soul would create certain circumstances and certain personality traits that would bring about that experience. But if you have a disease and you have the desire and the will to fight, that's because your soul has planted that sort of fortitude and courage, determination within you so that you could have the experience of fighting the disease. And then you get back to the other side after your lifetime and you review your life and you say, wow, I really fought that courageously. I had the experience of knowing what it's like to be courageous on the physical plane in a physical body. And then the disease becomes a cause for celebration because you couldn't have had that experience of courage any other way.
Yes, I agree. There's two questions come in there just nearly identical. One from the chat line, and it's Sticky Nins, looks like, is the name. And it says, if we choose our life before we live it, what role does karma play? And then on the email, it comes in and says, what happens if you attempt to circumvent karma or just don't want to keep your commitment?
Karma is one of the major reasons I've seen in my research for planning life challenges. So to take a very simple example, let's say that two people had a past life together in which one was physically ill and the other person was that person's caretaker. When those two people get back into spirit and have their life review, as we all do, they have a sense of unbalanced energy around that relationship. That's essentially what karma is unbalanced energy. And they're motivated to balance it. So the easiest, simplest, most direct way to do that is simply to switch roles. So the one who was physically ill plans the life challenge of caretaking. The one who was the caretaker plans the life challenge of physical illness. That's their karma. It's their desire to balance that unbalanced energy. Now, the question about whether or not you can sidestep or get out of your karma, the answer to that is both yes and no. Your karma is your karma. It's something that you've come in to balance and to live, and most likely it will bring certain experiences to you. But my understanding is that you want these experiences to cultivate certain qualities within yourself, namely things like compassion, unconditional love, forgiveness, harmony, balance, cooperation, sharing, reverence for life. These are the sorts of experiences that the soul is after. So if you, through the use of your own free will, cultivate these qualities and these experiences on your own, it's possible that some of the planned karmic challenges may not occur. Let me give an example to make this more concrete. Let's say that there is a soul who has a multiple incarnation history of deferring to the wishes of others once he or she gets into body. So this soul would be aware of that tendency after seeing it in the life review, and might very well say to itself, I would like to plan a lifetime in which I heal this tendency and I learn how to stand up for myself. So let's say arbitrarily that soul chooses to incarnate as a woman, carrying forward this energy of deferring to others for healing. The soul then goes to another soul in the soul group and says, this is my plan. I see that you have a tendency in past lives to be too domineering. Why don't we make a pre-birth agreement to marry around the age of 30? You will be my husband. I will be your wife. My challenge will be to stand up for myself. Yours will be to learn to respect the wishes of others. And although we know that it will probably be a turbulent relationship, hopefully we will both get the evolution and the growth that we seek here. So they set up that plan. Then, let's say that around the age of 25, the soul incarnating as the woman gets a job in which her employer is walking all over her and treating her unkindly and disrespectfully. Let's also suppose that she marshals all of her internal resources, makes a stand for herself, and says, stop, you may not treat me that way. If you want me to continue working here, you must treat me with kindness and respect. In the moment that she takes a stand for herself like that, there's a tremendous increase in vibration. And if she can sustain the increased vibration until the age of 30, when the planned marriage is supposed to occur, then one of two things happens. Either these two souls never meet each other because her vibration is now much higher, his presumably is lower, and so by virtue of the law of attraction, they don't come together. Or if they meet, now there's no chemistry, they have one date and that's the end of it. So by using her free will, this soul has obviated the need for the challenging marriage because she learned the lesson earlier in her lifetime.
We have three questions and 2 minutes. One question, does deserving have anything to do with it? Are you free to choose whatever, no matter what? Can we be whatever we want without limitation? Okay, hold that question. Second question, in your work, what have you found that people want? A life full of purpose, wealth, family, good health? And the third question, we have a caller that wants to ask you a question, and we'll do that after we go on off the air. So, does deserving have anything to do with it?
Deserving, meaning being worthy of?
Yeah, you get to be rich or something, and it's because you were poor in a last lifetime.
Well, that doesn't have to do with being deserving. I believe that everyone is a child of God and is therefore of infinite worth and value, and so everyone deserves whatever it is that they want. The point of being rich and then poor or poorer than rich, that's not because a soul is deserving or not. It's because souls in general seek to experience everything. So if you had a past life in which you were wealthy, then you would want to have one in which you were poor. If you were poor in a past life, then you would want to have one in which you were wealthy. It's said about Edgar Cayce that he had a number of lives in which he was a very wise man, just as he was when he was Edgar Cayce. And so because he had never had the experience of being a quote-unquote loser, apparently his soul planned an incarnation in which he would be very nondescript, not do anything in particular. He had such a life. And from the perspective of the personality, you and I would look at that person and say, what are they doing? But from the perspective of the soul, it was exactly what the soul wanted because the soul had never had an incarnation like that before.
I can't believe we're out of time. It's amazing and a fascinating subject. We have to go now. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for Breaking the Sound Bearers of Disease, along with Rob Schwartz. Please stay in touch with us. Without our audience, we would be talking to empty space. So thank you for being there. And Rob, if you would stay on the line, we have one question, and then you and I can talk after that as soon as we go off the air here. 3 seconds. Okay. We are off the air. I will pause the music. Okay, I am incredibly interested in this last question. It was from our audience. We've got 30 questions we didn't even answer. Deserving. Oh, in your work, what have you found that people most want? A life full of purpose, wealth, family, good health?
You know, in my work, which is focused on the pre-birth planning of life challenges, what I see a lot is that people want relief from suffering. And so some of the relief, and sometimes all of it, can come from understanding the deeper meaning of something. But what people are looking for very often is relief from suffering.
Emotional as well as physical.
Yes.
We had a guy come in, and we're still recording, we're just not streaming. And he had a diagnosis of Lou Gehrig's disease, and we looked at his vocal print, and it says, this is Lyme's disease. This is not Lou Gehrig's disease. And the relief for him, he was so afraid of dying. And I think one of the things that your book helps people through is dying is a transition, and they can talk to their loved ones, and they lose the fear about what's going on. Above everything else, that's what I see in a little bit of your book that I was able to read. So thank you for writing this. And
you're very welcome.
We will certainly put up your websites and all that. We have a caller on the air, I think. Caller, I don't know your phone number. It's coming in as a blocked call. There are three people left online. And caller, you are on the air. If you want to ask a question to Rob Schwartz, you put up your hand. Okay, I think maybe they've hung up. Okay. We're going to have you back again. There's just too many questions. We have questions about have you ever found someone with an alien from a different planet or universe? That's kind of a neat question.
You know, I think we all come from somewhere else, and I think we have incarnations as what we would call aliens. So I think that's something we're all doing. What is an alien? It's just a soul that has chosen to incarnate in a body on another planet. And as I understand it, we all do that.
Or from a different dimension. If you consider that telephone lines used to be one voice, one line, and now they change the frequency of the voices and then carry thousands of voices on one line. Think about thousands of dimensions being right here, and we just can't see them because they're like dog whistles. They're out of our range of hearing. So I think those other dimensions are already here. But I love your answer about they want a lack of suffering. Fear of death, what else have they asked? Well, we'll just do it the next show.
Okay, that would be wonderful.
And I have your phone number, so I'm going to turn around and call you right back. And then
okay.
Let me end the show officially. All of you hanging on the line and in the chat room, we really appreciate your being with us today. And stay in touch. Write to me at Sherry on Air, and you can write to Rob at
YourSoulsPlan@yahoo.com.
YourSoulsPlan@yahoo.com. Sounds wonderful. They have just totally kicked us off of everything, so I might as well go and shut down. Thank you, Rob. I will call you back in just a few minutes.
All right. Thank you, Sharon. Bye-bye.
Bye.